Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Ah, California, the most American state and a state like no other. One day it's the trailblazer, the next the nation's basket case. When the bust was bad, it was brutal in California. State finances, a nightmare, brink of bankruptcy, we were told. Layoffs, cutbacks, pitched political battles, and then suddenly, last week, Governor Jerry Brown says California is back with a balanced budget, even a surplus, after spending cuts and higher taxes, an even keel. Wow, what can we learn here? This hour on Point, California fiscal turnaround and lessons for the country. You can join the conversation. Can you believe it? Does it look real? Can other states do it the California way? Can the country? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from San Francisco is Wahini Vara. She covers California politics for the Wall Street Journal. Wahini, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So here's Jerry Brown with his great big charts and his great big news. California kind of out of the woods. Is this for real, Wahini?
Yeah, it is for real. It's pretty wild. I think people outside of California must be scratching their heads since the last time anyone heard about California. It was in a big mess. What has happened is essentially three things. Jerry Brown, with the help of California voters, California voters raised taxes on themselves, sales tax and income tax. The economy improved, and the state also made some significant cuts, and so it is for real. California is back on firm fiscal footing, at least for the time being, although there are some caveats associated with that as well.
Well, let's look at that. Let's start with the economy, because, of course, that makes everything easier, but I still see a pretty high unemployment rate in California. What's the improvement that they're looking at, Wahini?
So California is an unusual state in that a more typical than usual state, depending on how you look at it. But what I mean by that is that when the nation faces economic troubles, California often suffers more than the nation as a whole, because some of the factors that drive the nation's economic troubles are concentrated in California. So most recently, the real estate bust, of course, drove the recent recession.
Yeah.
In California, we had been building up and building up and building up, building new homes. And that was driving a big boom here in California. That was an outsized boom, bigger than the boom nationwide. And then when that all fell off, California suffered more than most. So what's happening now is that as the nation is improving, California is actually doing quite well compared with other states. And what's driving that actually is a little bit of a recovery in areas like construction. But largely, it's driven by the strength of places like Silicon Valley and, you know, the movie industry to an extent.
Now, the unemployment rate's still pretty high, though. It was 11-something. It's still 9-something, isn't it? I mean, that seems an indication that it's hardly, you know, break out the champagne time.
That's true, but I think a couple of things. One is that we're coming back. California is coming back from such a low point. So, under 10% wouldn't have sounded all that great a couple of, you know, several years ago. But in the context of what happened over the past couple of years, it's a big improvement. And since we're looking at this year as compared with the last couple of years, it is significant. But as you point out, it's not the only factor. California also raised taxes on itself. I should say continued some tax increases of recent years into the future, although these tax increases are structured a little bit differently than that.
I want to look at that. That's interesting, because the voters themselves said, yes, please raise these taxes on it. We'll look at that. Let's look first, if we could, Wahini, at cuts. I mean, the last time we heard, you know, the California university system was suffering huge cuts. There were all kinds of cuts and layoffs and state workers staying home and talk of opening prison doors to let prisoners out because they couldn't afford to keep and feed them. What were the hardest cuts California took, and what's that cut profile look like overall?
The state really suffered across the board, I have to say. state universities, the famous UC system, as well as the Cal State system in California, suffered big cuts. Tuition rose quite a lot during the rough times. Schools suffered. School funding was cut, and schools actually had to cut, the education system had to, the state had to suspend a requirement that school sizes be below a certain level several years ago because of these fiscal troubles that prevented the state from keeping class sizes small. There were cuts to programs for the poor. There were cuts for programs to the disabled, the elderly, and as you point out, there were cuts to prison spending. So really, the spending across the board was lowered.
Here's Jerry Brown last week with his big charts and the big news, California balancing its famously troubled budget. Here he is talking about first cuts.
We've cut massively. We cut 25% out of the colleges and universities. We owe $10 or $11 billion we borrowed through deferrals to our schools. We cut health care. We cut the age of the blind and disabled. We put families on CalWORKs. We got rid of redevelopment. We got rid of the Williamson Act subventions for open space land. You name it. We did things that were never done before. Plus, we have the new taxes for 7 years, and we have the proposition that brought back $1 billion in the so-called single sales factor. So we're in a better place.
In a better place after all that. We'll come back and look at those cuts. Wahine, the other side of that was this Proposition 30, where voters were asked to vote for a temporary higher taxes. How long, on whom, and how big a part of their getting back in the black is that?
It's significant. It contributes about, it's expected to contribute about $6 billion a year, although that changes from year to year over the next several years. It lasts for the next several fiscal years.
Who are the taxes on? How much? What?
The taxes are on the wealthy. The income tax hike is on the wealthy, so it's individuals making $250,000 or more and couples making $500,000 or more, so their income tax increases significantly between 1 and 3 percentage points. There's also an across-the-board sales tax increase of a quarter of a percentage point over the next several years. And the pretty remarkable thing, as you point out, is that this was Californians voting to tax themselves, which I think they agreed to do. They did largely because the income tax hit was concentrated among higher income earners rather than everyone.
And the higher the income, the higher the hit. Not so big at $250,000, but bigger and bigger as the incomes rose. And California's got some pretty big incomes.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, some of these income tax levels are among the highest in the nation at this point.
There was a lot of skepticism, outrage about that in conservative circles nationally. It was Rush Limbaugh. This was back in November, saying, it's not going to work. They're not going to do it. It won't work on higher taxes. Here's Limbaugh.
I'm not trying to diminish the hell that you're going through living in California. I'm from the perspective of people that don't live there. Even some of the people who do it, Richard, for all of the problems that you can describe, and Prop 30 is clearly a problem, and they're going to get, by the way, they're going to erase Prop 13 next. I mean, they're going to get rid of the adjustments made long ago by Howard Jarvis on property tax. You're just getting started with tax increases on it, because this is not going to close any budgets.
It's not going to close any budgets, said Rush Limbaugh. But here was Jerry Brown, Wahine, last week, I'm sure you heard him, saying, we're moving forward.
California came through probably 15 years of great fiscal difficulty, some of it by overspending, some of it by tax reductions that we really couldn't afford, and a lot of it by the Great Recession.
So here we are. He's declaring we're back in the black. He's going to raise spending on K-12 education. I think I read Wahine put aside $1 billion for a rainy day. That sounds kind of incredible. Does everybody agree that it's, back on track in California? Are there dissenters?
There are some, I wouldn't say there are dissenters. There are some legitimate caveats here. So on a sort of year-to-year basis, it is true that California is back in decent shape. California still has significant debt that it has to pay down, and there are a couple of categories of that debt. During the bad times, California did sort of borrow from itself. Unlike the federal government, states do have to balance their budget every year. So you can't spend more than you take in, but you can do some sort of tricky accounting to borrow when you don't borrow from yourself when you don't have enough. So California did a lot of that. Jerry Brown promises to erase much of that debt. But there are, you know, California has a large unfunded pension and retiree health benefit liability that it has to deal with. And so some of the long-term problems that that you hear about California facing and states in general facing have not gone away. But certainly for the time being and on an annual basis, we seem to be okay for the next couple of years.
It's kind of incredible. We thought they had gridlock. How'd they get out of that, Wahine?
About 4 years ago, the state faced a huge deficit. It was almost about half of the size of the general fund. So gigantic deficit for a state that, like I said, has to balance its budget every year. And Democrats and a couple of Republicans did get together and say, let's raise some taxes on Californians. And it was very controversial. Some Republican lawmakers lost their jobs because of it. But that that sort of started the state on a path, I think, toward firmer fiscal footing. But over the next couple of years, California still suffered. And over the last couple of years, Jerry Brown tried to work with the state legislature to put a measure on the ballot to raise taxes. That didn't work. He wasn't able to get the consensus he needed. Mm-hmm. And so what he did is that he turned to California's initiative system, which allows anyone to put a measure on the ballot himself. And he just gathered signatures and did it the way any citizen might.
And meanwhile, a supermajority of Democrats in the California legislature, and off they go. Wahine Vara with the Wall Street Journal in San Francisco. Thanks so much for opening our eyes here. We're going to dive on in. Thanks for joining us, Wahine.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour after years of big fiscal trouble about California saying it's now looking at a budget surplus. We're asking how they did that and if there are lessons for the country here. Here was Jerry Brown right out front, California governor last week, saying, hey, you know, maybe there is a model for the country here.
I realize it's hard. The Democrats want to do one thing, Republicans want to do another. And I'm in a fairly strategic position to make things work. So I would like, at this stage of my life, which I like to say, to do something that would make California a leader and an example of what America has to do. And that is both fiscal discipline and imaginative investment in technology and society and the environment and all the rest. So it's not just one thing.
Fiscal discipline and imaginative investment. There was not much talk of investment just a couple of years ago when things were really tough in California. Economy on the ropes, red ink all over the place. People saying, how do we ever get out of that? Here's an ad that then-Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger ran in the thick of that to try to rally support.
Californians are losing jobs, losing homes, and are worried about their children's future. And Sacramento is asking me to sign a budget that raises your taxes and spends money we do not have. I will not sign a budget that does not address the waste, fraud, and abuse in our government. I'm standing firm for a balanced budget that does not raise your taxes. I'm asking you to stand firm with me. Stand for California.
Arnold Schwarzenegger in 2009, no to new taxes. Californians ultimately voted to raise taxes on the highest earners. But Jerry Brown and others also went for cuts. Here he is talking last week about fiscal discipline.
Fiscal discipline is not the enemy of democratic governance, but rather its fundamental predicate. And I'm going to tell them that fiscal discipline, balance, allows us to take care of the needs of the people over time instead of just having a momentary rash of excitement, then we pay with a hangover several years later.
California's Democratic Governor Jerry Brown talking about fiscal discipline. He also led a big push to raise taxes. They've got both. They've got a balanced budget. Joe Matthews joins us right now from Pasadena, California. He's a fellow at the New America Foundation, contributing writer to the Los Angeles Times, columnist for the Daily Beast, co-author with Mark Paul of California Crack Up, and The People's Machine. Joe Matthews, thanks very much for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Tom.
How did you do it?
We haven't done it.
Oh, great.
This is,
okay,
this is the California version of President George W. Bush declaring mission accomplished off the coast of California, in fact. It's a premature victory.
About Iraq. Why premature?
Well, because we've got, you know, many of the caveats that the correspondent from the Wall Street Journal talked about, but also we have still a fundamentally broken budget system. We have a nice snapshot in time where we actually, the nonpartisan legislative analyst says we still appear to have a fairly small, you know, slightly less than $2 billion deficit problem. There are some nice projections going forward in the next 4 years, if nothing changes, of surplus, but things change. And we essentially have the same budget system that got us into this trouble. I mean, there are two big narratives you're hearing. One was mostly advanced by conservatives and Republicans that California was this terrible basket case, that it overspent itself into great trouble, and this is what happens. The national lesson was supposed to be, this is what happens nationally when you leave Democrats in charge. That really wasn't a true narrative. And now what you're hearing is this sort of Democratic counter-narrative, which is like, see, hey, we're in charge, we just got two-thirds, and we have a Democratic governor, and things are good. They're hunky-dory. That's not true either. The real problem here is a very peculiar California problem of a budget system. California makes it very easy to lock things into the Constitution, much easier than in other states. Mm-hmm. And we've locked in our preferences for more spending and for limitations on taxes. They're still there. A very temporary tax increase, which is what Prop 30 does, doesn't change that. It's actually sort of more of the California disease. Prop 30 temporarily raised taxes while making a new spending commitment in the state constitution that lasts forever. So this is sort of a moment of rest. We're not sinking anymore before the ratchet of this crazy state budget system we have ratchets back up to where spending gets ratcheted up and taxes get ratcheted down. We haven't dealt with that very sort of core broken system problem. And I fear that the people who are talking triumphantly now may in none too short a time be eating a lot of crow.
Well, we want to look closely here. I mean, at the same time, something's going on. You heard me talking with Wahina Vara from the Wall Street Journal. I'm asking her twice, is it for real? I mean, they're no slouch, and she's saying yes. So something has happened here. I mean, what is better and what's not, Joe, when you look at the bottom line and the surrounding?
Well, I mean, in a short-term situation, you can say lots of things look better. You get revenues from Prop 30. That's some additional sales tax revenues for 4 years.
Plus the taxes income tax, on higher income earners. Was it $6 billion total, they're guessing?
Well, that's the guess. I mean, you never know. When you tax the folks at the top of the system, you that's very volatile. So you don't know how much you're going to get. It can be big. It can be small. One of the contributing factors in California to the sort of roller coaster ride we've been on is the volatility of a progressive system. Now, I tend to think high taxes on rich people make a lot of sense. But you have to acknowledge that volatility and have a real rainy day fund. We have a couple of rainy day funds on the book, but we don't put much money in them. The $1 billion you mentioned is not progress in a budget. Even in the worst of the Schwarzenegger budgets, there was always about $1 billion put aside as a prudent reserve in the budget document. But it's not real in the sense that you and I, you know, or our families would think of putting aside money.
What's your sense of why Californians voted for Prop 30? I mean, is it just because the biggest hit went to top earners, and so why not? I mean, there's also a sales tax element. How did Jerry Brown persuade the state to pay more?
Well, I think what Jerry Brown and Democrats in the legislature did and unions that backed them, they helped construct a budget that was tied to the measure that had trigger cuts. We created our own sort of cliff. And those triggers would have triggered if Prop 30 had failed and its tax increase has not gone into effect. And those were heavily targeted at schools, which Californians care very much about. Californians, polling showed, no, they knew need to do a better job of funding schools. We were among the worst when, by a lot of independent measures. And so it was essentially a hostage taking. Uncle Jerry's got his kids in, got your kids in the car, and are you going to pay? And in that kind of ransom case, you know, we decided to pay. Again,
are you suggesting there was some money that he could have spent on those kids and education that he just didn't? There wasn't.
No,
was
I mean,
there?
He set up, he could have cut lots of different things. I mean, there's mm-hmm. a lot of, there's some discretion in our system, not as much as there can be on cuts. I mean, it's very hard for governors, very hard for legislature. I think California legislature, California governor, someone who should be treated with great pity because there's not a lot of options because we, the voters in California, have locked so many spending and taxation decisions into ballot initiative statute, which we're the only state where you can't change ballot initiative statutes mm-hmm. without another vote of the people or into our Constitution. So, you know, the choices were limited, but they, you know, it was essentially a fright budget. It was deliberately designed to say, you know, the schools are going to get cut, which would have meant an already shorter school year.
Right.
The other part of this perspective that's really important is, you know, it's a weird kind of victory. We're sort of like the guy who's gone down deeper, sinking deeper into the quicksand and the hole, and we stop sinking, but we're down deep and we say, hooray, it's victory. We've lost a lot. I mean, in just the last 4 years, you know, tuition and fees have doubled at the University of California.
Yeah.
You've seen, you know, really hard hits to social services and human services. And people ask, why do you cut those things in California? Because that's the system that we've constructed. Those are the two things that don't really have constitutional and voter-approved initiative protection. So we cut those things because we can. It's much harder to do those things.
Joe, stand by and pass in, if you would. We've got people listening and thinking about their own states, thinking about California, thinking about the country. Let me begin to bring them in, if I may. Mike's joining us from Needham, Massachusetts. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I have just two things here. How much money was spent on the referendum? I understand they spent an enormous amount to get it passed, the tax increases, where there was no opposing view that had any funding. And the other one is, what happens when defense cuts kick in from the national government? I understand California has a large defense industry.
Those are great questions. Was it a big spend to get the tax increase proposition through, Joe?
It was. I'm not sure I've seen all of the dollars reported out. But, you know, it was tens of millions of dollars, which I can sound a lot like a lot. But in California, place where, yeah, you know, it costs several million dollars just to have ads for a week, you know, a $30 million campaign, yes, is quite common. On the no side, there was quite a bit of money, not as much mm-hmm. as there was on the yes side. The business community was very effectively neutralized by Governor Brown and didn't give big to opposing Prop 30. I'm not sure it would have made a whole lot of difference. I think the trigger cuts, in the sense that we didn't want to do any more damage to schools, really mm-hmm. were what carried the day. In terms of defense cuts, that's a real issue, particularly in parts of inland Southern California and in San Diego County. They could make some economic impact, and it's, I've actually been surprised that sort of outside of San Diego media, I haven't seen much conversation about that, but that's part of the problem of California. We're not really a state. We're much more of a country with about 6 or 8 states within it. And one of the problems of bringing us together to fix our system is that we don't really all inhabit the same place, hear the same media, and et cetera.
What about the national picture, though? I mean, it's kind of a country, but it's also part of the USA, and we've got these huge questions hanging over Washington now. Could all Jerry Brown's hoorays be washed out by fiscal issues and conflict in Washington?
It's a real risk. When you look in this big, I mean, California has been having this problem with this broken system, as Brown mentioned, for 15 years. I could make the case it's longer, much longer than that. But about half of the problem we dealt with in the last 4 years really seems to have been part of the national recession. And if folks in Washington do something, you know, with the debt limit that, you know, pushes the country, does something poorly to the country's economy, that will hit us. We are growing. We are coming back. You mentioned the still high unemployment rate. Mm-hmm. That's not a huge surprise. I wouldn't invest too much in that. California is traditionally, even in the times we think of as the glory days of California, has had a higher unemployment rate than the rest of the country. The explanation has typically been there are a lot of people like to come here. There's a lot of mm-hmm. we're an optimistic sort of people looking for jobs. And then when times get good, more people show up and want to seek jobs because there are other reasons to live here.
Yep. Let's go to Peter in Hartford, Connecticut. Peter, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm from California.
Yeah.
I think the explanation for how we got into our financial mess and how we finally got out of it is rather simple, actually. In the late 90s and in 2000, we had a moderate Democratic governor, Gray Davis, mm-hmm. and we had split control of the legislature. And we did something that most states could never do, which is we simultaneously increased spending on public programs and we decreased tax rates and fees across the board.
Because the economy was so good, or why could you do that, Peter?
Because that was during the dot-com boom.
Yeah.
We were creating millionaires every week, and so the state coffers were overflowing, right? And so both parties got their cake and ate it too. But the problem was once that bubble burst and the coffers were now in deficit, we then had a higher level of spending than we previously had and a lower tax base.
Right, right.
And so for years, we were mired in this, how do we cut enough programs to close that budget gap? But you can't just cut your way out of a situation where you both increase programs and decrease the tax rate.
Peter, there's a firsthand account. Joe Matthews, let me bring it to you in Pasadena. And there California stood and just got creamed when things got bad. What about Peter's analysis of what he saw there? You know, more spending, less in taxes, and it was kind of baked in the cake. I'm also curious in your interpretation of, you know, it was a split legislature for a long time. Now it's got a Democratic supermajority. How do you interpret that voter response, Joe?
I mean, his description of what happened with the spending and the tax cuts in the late 90s and the dot-com boom is true. The political context is wrong. We very rarely had a split legislature. I believe the Republicans have had it for 2 years in the last 30 plus. I mean, we've had Democratic legislators, though that hasn't mattered a huge amount because so much of legislative decisions around fiscal matters are really not in the hands of the legislature. They're baked into initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to do things like to raise taxes, it still requires two-thirds. So it might have felt like it split legislature because even though you have Democratic majorities, they couldn't raise revenues by themselves. They needed Republicans. That has now changed just in this last election. And that represents an opportunity to do things on revenues that are more permanent than Prop 30, though that doesn't seem to be the way Governor Brown wants to go. It also represents an opportunity to start changing and unwinding a lot of these constitutional provisions that keep us in hock because it takes two-thirds to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot. Democrats now have that. So there is some conversation in Sacramento about trying to do things to unwind the system so we don't quickly go into the hole.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. After years of big fiscal trouble, California now says it's looking at a budget surplus. We're asking this hour how they did that. Did they really do it? And if there are lessons for the country here. Joe Matthews is with us from the New America Foundation, joins us today from Pasadena, California, co-author with Mark Paul of California Crack Up. Also with us right now from Westchester in Pennsylvania, Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, co-founder of economy.com, author of Financial Shock. Joe, stand by in Pasadena. Mark Zandi, thank you for being with us. What do you make of Jerry Brown's big announcement last week, Mark? A, do you believe it? Do you buy it? And B, are there lessons for other states, for the country here?
Well, it's great news. I think it's symptomatic of improving fiscal conditions across much of the country. Most state governments are in much better shape today than they were a year or two ago. And so that's very, very good for the broader national economic recovery. Yeah, I believe it. Although, you know, Joe makes a really good point that this is probably near-term temporary, that longer run, California hasn't changed its budget process, and it has some pretty significant fiscal issues that it's going to have to grapple with in the future. So good news in the near term, longer run, still a lot of work to do. You know, I do think we shouldn't stretch the similarities between California and the rest of the country too much. I mean, California is different in lots of respects. It's a unique state, a very wealthy state, a very cyclical state. It does really well in the good times and does really bad in the bad times. But one lesson I think that we can't take from California's recent experience is that to address our fiscal problems nationally, we have to have a balanced approach. That means government spending cuts. We do need to cut back on government spending, at least the growth in government spending. And we need revenue, more revenue, tax revenue increases. So I don't think you can address our national fiscal issues or problems without doing both. It has to be balanced. And I think that's the key lesson here.
So is there a kind of parallel national story? I mean, we're not ignoring Joe's caveats and big concerns about how it goes down the road for California. But it is a state, not a country. The federal government has some obligations California doesn't have. I mean, can you really say, well, if it's done some good for California, the same formula would work nationally? How does that factor into the big philosophical debate that seems to be going on, Mark, about, you know, when to cut, how much to cut, when you've got to spend, how much to spend?
Yeah, you're right, Tom. I mean, California is quite unique. Again, I don't want to draw too many strong parallels between the California experience and what's happening nationally. And you're right, the national government, the federal government, has lots of big responsibilities, particularly defense, that the state does not have. So we've got to be careful doing that. But the state has been quite good at addressing its fiscal problems, both through reining in spending. And you can see it in the number of people who work in state government in California. That has come down quite significantly and is symptomatic of the budget cutting. And the governor did a pretty good job laying out in the comments earlier where you showed his talk about what he did to cut spending. But they also raised revenue. And both those things together, I think, is why California is in a much better place. And I think it's why nationally, you know, I think we should take that as a lesson, and we need to do both. Now, we did get some tax revenue increases with the recent deal to address the fiscal cliff.
Yep.
Now we need some spending cuts, and that has to come with the deal to increase the Treasury debt ceiling. So we've gone part of the way in following California. Now we got to go the full way and get some spending cuts here.
Let me put this question to each of you, and Joe, I'll come first to you. When you look at the scale of California's spending cuts in these recent years, and they've been significant, how do they compare with what's been talked about in Washington, Joe? And if the country cut federal spending at the same rate, just hypothetically, that California did in its efforts, would that be the kind of cut that would send the whole national economy back into recession, as many fear and warn?
Well, I'm not an economist, but if you cut at that percentage rate, now, you know, a lot of the numbers that we've heard are greatly exaggerated. We used to combine two sort of years' worth of shortfalls in our budget into one, which you'd see these big 30 and 40 billion, and people would say you're cutting a third of the budget. It was actually, you know, simply it's 10 to 20%. I mean, I don't know if you cut 10 to 20% of the federal budget, I don't believe you'd be in balance.
I'm not asking balance. Balance is a great goal, and we want to get there.
Yeah.
But if you just did it in the kind of time frame that California did it, and we'll take your real number, however you want to describe it.
Yeah.
Do you think that would be, you know, the sort of recession-creating pill federally or not?
I mean, from what I read of the economics, it would not help the national economy, certainly. I don't know where that tips over in the recession. And, you know, I'm a journalist. When I talk to economists, they always seem to have different opinions. But it would be significant, and it wouldn't be healthy. Again, it's an odd comparison. I mean, a federal government is basically an insurance company with the military. And a state government does three things. It educates, it medicates, and it incarcerates. You know, and you know, the hits, it's very hard to cut the insurance company part. We have, you know, our pension obligations, our retiree health are part of that, and we've found it very hard to tackle those politically, and really have not, even though our retiree health for public employees could easily be replaced, could be eliminated tomorrow and replaced by, you know, Obamacare and Medicare, which now cover everybody. But we've been unwilling to even take that step.
A federal government as an insurance company with a military. I've got to meditate on that one. Mark, what about it? The California's cuts. You say the lesson here is more revenue and less spending. Okay. What about the rate at which California bit the bullet? Could the federal government do that and not croak the economy?
Probably not. You make a good point. In fact, the federal government really stepped up during the teeth of the recession. If you go back 3-4 years ago in the height of the Great Recession, provided a lot of help to state governments so that they didn't have to cut as much, particularly in 2009, 2010. So I think the federal government actually helped to cushion some of the cuts that states were going through. So no, I'm not advocating that the government, federal government, cut back spending or raise taxes quickly. We have to make sure that the economy is growing on solid ground before those cuts and revenue increases really kick in. So it's phased in over a period of time. And the federal budget horizon is 10 years, and that's the appropriate way to think about it. And that's another, I think, important lesson to take from California's experience, and that is growth is important. I mean, California's economy is doing well right now. In fact, the Bay Area of California is arguably one of the strongest big metropolitan area economies in the country at this point. So when you have growth, life becomes a lot easier in terms of addressing fiscal issues. And,
absolutely.
And I think that really helped California.
Is there a growth rate
you
can put a number on there, Mark? Is it broken out that way? What percent, you know, now? You say it's strong. How strong?
Well, you know, I don't know the statistics. I'll tell you through my mind's eye, so I may not get this exactly right.
People say if we could get back to 3% nationally, oh, hallelujah, that would be helpful. But are they ahead of that, behind,
track? They're ahead of it. Let me do it in terms of jobs. So job growth in the nation is almost 1.5% year over year. California, the state as a whole, is closer to 2. And if you go to the Bay Area of California, it's 2.5 to 3. So it's almost double, if not double, the national average. And the other point is, in the Bay Area, you've got very wealthy households. And, of course, California's income tax structure is very progressive. And so you generate a lot of revenue when things improve, particularly in the tech sector. So when Facebook goes public, that generates a lot of income that's taxed at a very high rate and generates a boatload of revenue.
Right.
So that the growth there in California, that's why, you know, when you get growth in California, the fiscal picture changes very rapidly, much more rapidly than in most other parts of the country.
Let's go to Ellen calling from Boston. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to quickly comment, having lived on the East Coast and the West Coast in California, that I feel the major problem with California's financial situation is their property tax, Proposition 13.
Mm-hmm.
And that tends to favor people who have lived there a long time and give them grandfathered assessments that are completely unrealistic. For example, you move to San Diego County, you buy a house for $1.5 million, your property tax is $22,500. $22,500.
Okay.
Your neighbor is paying $1,500. Same house.
So they're grandfathered in. The tax cap keeps them way down there. Wow, that's a huge disparity.
Yes, and then they amended that furthermore 2 times and said, if you buy your parents' house, you also get that grandfathered assessment for from your parents.
It's good to be old California, Ellen. It's good to be old California. That's interesting. Joe Matthews, is that for real? That's a big gap.
That's true. And I bought a house in Southern California in the fall of 2011. It had been owned by a Greek family since 1945. They were barely paying $1,000 a year in property taxes. I pay 8 times that now since it reassessed on the purchase. That is a factor, but the deeper problem with Prop 13 in California and relates to budget problems is that it imposed a 2/3 vote for raising taxes in the state legislature, and it essentially opposed a 2/3 vote for of the voters in a local community for raising taxes.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a very big factor in creating a lot of overspending at the local level in California, because local elected officials now spend money, but they cannot raise taxes themselves, and there's an accountability to having to set the tax rate for the spending you do. So when people talk about overspending in California, it's not the state level where it's actually very hard to spend. Mm-hmm. It's actually at the local level where there's this great incentive system to spend that ironically is was championed by conservatives and still protected by conservatives.
It's interesting. Here we've got all kinds of response online, but here's one listener who talking about the Jerry Brown talking about his new surplus fiscally responsible writes, "I will believe it when I see it." On the other hand, Michigan writes to us and says, "Too bad voters can't get around Republican stupidity," Michigan says, "on the national level, the same way California did by taking individual initiative straight to the voters and bypassing Congress." I mean, Mark Zandi, there is a lot of frustration that the U.S. Congress, for whatever reason, is not doesn't seem to be productively working this out. There's a little envy from Michigan of California going to the initiative and saying, we're going to just override and say, yes, we'll call for these new revenues if that's what's needed.
Yeah, and Tom, this is one of the big differences, obviously, between California and what's going on at the federal level. It's just the political process and the budget process. And you're right. You can't do – there's no initiative at the national level, so we're stuck with Congress, and we have to navigate through that. So it makes it a lot more difficult to get it's difficult to get things done in California, but it's even more difficult to get things done at a national level. I do want to make one other point that I think is important about the state of California, and that is the state fiscal situation is good, but the local fiscal situation is still very, very bad, and that goes back to the property tax situation, which most local governments finance themselves with. Mm-hmm. There's several municipalities that are in bankruptcy or pretty close. And so while things are good at the state level, they're pretty tough at the local level. So the state as a whole still has big fiscal issues to deal with, even in the near term.
Oh, yeah. And, Joe, I assume that education largely comes out of those property taxes as well.
Well, we centralize it. I mean, that's one of the odd things that Prop 13 gave us. The money goes into Sacramento and then comes back. Mm-hmm. So there's not as clear a bright line, and that's part of our problem. I mean, to the caller's question about fiscal discipline, I mean, this state on a per capita basis now spends, I turned 40 this spring, and it will now spends less money on a per capita basis than it has in my lifetime. I mean, we are.
What do you take from that?
Fiscally disciplined at the state level.
Mm-hmm. So you've got it. You're there. Congratulations.
Well, I mean,
that's not your national image yet, but okay.
that we don't have the revenues.
And by the way, if you look at the national federal government expenditures as a share of GDP, it too has not changed appreciably since 1980. And you could throw in state local government expenditures plus federal expenditures and look at that as a share of GDP, and that too has not changed appreciably. It's a little elevated now only because the economy is still weak and there's still a lot of money going to people who are in financial difficulty. But in the broad scheme, historical scheme of things, government spending as a share of the economy has not changed in over 30 years.
Jerry Brown very forthright last week about saying what he describes as a little surplus that they're coming up with in California. He wants to channel toward lower-income schools with special problems, and he said he's got no apology for that. Those with less should get more. Here's Governor Brown again on Thursday.
Our future depends not on across-the-board funding, but in disproportionately funding those schools that have disproportionate challenges. Now, we know from back to Greek philosophy, Aristotle said, treating unequals equally is not justice. And people are in different situations. Growing up in Compton or Richmond is not like it is to grow up in Los Gatos or Beverly Hills or Piedmont.
Joe Matthews, you're sitting right there, you're looking at it, you've got your big dose of skepticism, and we hear it. But for the rest of the country looking on and facing a big season or, you know, weeks right in front of us of fiscal talk, what do you think we should learn from California right now, Joe?
I think there are lessons on governance and on politics. On governance, avoid supermajorities, avoid inflexible tax limitations and spending commitments, of which we still have many. I think there's also a very strong lesson for Republicans. If I were thinking nationally about the Republican Party, I think you see Republicans starting to do some of the things in California that buried them. There's been a lot of conversation about getting on the wrong side of demographic change, of the more diverse generations of younger voters, and that's part of it. But Republicans in California really, in this used leverage in this system, used supermajorities to become hostage takers, to threaten to kind of take us over the cliff. That really became their strategy in California every budget year. You'd hear budget crisis, often Republicans essentially creating a hostage crisis. Yep. And that hurt them politically.
Mark Zandi, we're almost out of time. Joe, Mark, the same question to you. Lessons for the country, looking at California in this season, special season in Washington.
Well, just to repeat myself, I mean, I think we need a balanced approach to our fiscal problems, both the tax revenue increases and spending cuts. We're just not going to be able to do it with one side or the other. We need to do both. And hopefully our policymakers in Washington can figure out a way around their own constraints and reach some consensus like the folks in California did.
Do you think we're going back to the hostage-taking scenario in Washington right now, Mark?
Well, I think we're in that situation. Mm-hmm. Let's just hope that the hostage is freed before it all becomes a problem for all of us.
Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics. Thank you very much for being with us today, Mark.
Thank you.
And Joe Matthews at the New America Foundation in Pasadena, California. Joe, thanks for joining us. Thanks for your insights. Very grateful to you.
Thank you.
Listen, tomorrow we're looking at Israeli politics. They can loom pretty large in American policy. They've got a big election coming up there in just a week. We're going to look at some quite different visions for Israel's future. Join us. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.